Okay, so verse 1. Hear the word of the Lord, O children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. There is no faithfulness or steadfast love and no knowledge of God in the land. There is swearing, lying, murder, stealing, and committing adultery. They break all bounds and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Therefore the land mourns and all who dwell in it languish. And also the beasts of the fields and the birds of the heavens and even the fish of the sea are taken away. So what we see here is we see this controversy, this lawsuit that that Yahweh has against his people Israel, okay? And these are the three things. And these are the three things that we're going to kind of break up into these next 3 weeks. And they're going to overlap. There's going to be they're all going to be in each some of these chapters as we go through. But it kind of breaks out that these two chapters or three chapters is talking about there's no knowledge in the land. They don't have a knowledge of God, okay? So, but these are the three things. There's no faithfulness or steadfast love, and there's no knowledge of God in the land. And so as we go through, kind of pick out, be thinking about this no knowledge in the land, because that seems to be the focus of these next three chapters. And so in verse 2, we see, because of this absence of truth, because of no love, because of no knowledge of God, these specific morals are not followed through on. There's swearing, there's lying, there's murder, there's stealing, there's committing adultery. And if you look back, this is the law of God. This is the Ten Commandments. And so this is summed up in these things, these Ten Commandments. There's swearing, there's lying, there's murder, there's stealing, committing adultery, and murder. Bloodshed follows bloodshed. So this is how the people look right now. This is the people of God. This is the nation of Israel. And this is what he's saying about him. And then when we see that there's no knowledge of God in the land, which we see throughout these chapters, it's because they don't know who God is. Let me give you this definition for knowledge. I don't even remember who wrote this. I wrote this down when I started the book of Hosea, so I'm not quite sure. But we're talking about God and knowledge. It says the experiential awakening to God in love that affects our conduct. So it is the experiential awakening to God in love that affects our conduct. So when you know God, you have experiences from God, he promises things, you see those truths played out in your life. What happens is you know God, you know his character, you know his nature through experience, through his word. And then what happens is we live that out in love. So now we love God. And now what do we want to do? We are obedient to his word. So if the people of Israel had a knowledge of God in the land, if they had a knowledge of God, what they would have done is they would have loved God, and then they would have been obedient to his word. But instead, they disobeyed. And they're swearing, lying, murder, stealing, committing adultery, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Murder upon murder is happening in this society. So there's no knowledge of God. And he says, therefore, the land mourns and all who dwell in it languish, and also the beasts of the fields and the birds of the heaven and even the fish of the sea are taken away. So this curse involves the land. John.
Before we go too far, yep. Can I make a connection with Revelation 2?
Sure.
So to the letter of the church in Thyatira, Jesus commends them for their faith and love.
Okay.
And Hosea here is saying that Israel has
no faith and no love.
I was thinking there'd be no connection there.
Yeah, there it is. Okay, so this curse comes upon the land as well as the people. Because we know Deuteronomy 28, it says that this curse is going to become because they're disobedient. Okay, but it comes upon the land too. If you remember back to Amos 4, when it talked about, he was saying things like, there's no rain going to be on the earth. There's going to be no water. There's going to be famine upon the earth. And he always says, yet you did not return to me. So these curses are happening, and it's upon the land just as it's upon the people. And that's what we see here in verse 3. It's going to affect the land mourns. It's going to affect the beasts of the fields, the birds of the heaven, the sea, the fish of the sea. And he says, yet let no one contend and let no one accuse, for with you is my contention, O priest. So this is a challenging verse, depending on how you think. If it's actually talking about priests, or if you have an ESV, you'll see a footnote that says for priests, It says, or for your people are like those who contend with the priests. Okay, so in the Old Testament, you would bring something to the priest. The priest would make a decision on something, okay? And then you had to follow through, or there would be, you could be put to death. And that's what, that the priest made those decisions, okay? And people would grumble, and people would protest, okay, about what the priest did, or what he said was to take place. And he's saying, so I think in this verse, Aaron, I'm actually talking about priests. I think they're actually talking about this footnote, about not contending or about not protesting what's been said. So he's saying, yet let no one contend. Don't protest. Let no one accuse, for with you is my contention, because you are the ones swearing. You are the ones lying. You are the ones stealing. You are the ones committing murder. That's you. Don't protest. Don't think it's not you, because it is. And he goes on, you shall stumble by day. The prophet also shall stumble you by with you by night. And I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge. I reject you from being a priest to me. So they were stumbled. As they're walking, they will stumble because of the things they're doing. They are being disobedient, and this will take them down a road of death. And then at night, when they need somebody to help direct them as a prophet, the prophets are going to stumble because this is the road the nation is going down. Because they have no knowledge of God. And he says, I will destroy your mother, probably talking about the nation. That's why I think it's probably also not talking about priests. He says, I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for their lack of knowledge because they rejected knowledge. I reject you from being a priest to me. So they're destroyed. The whole reason they're being destroyed is because of their lack of knowledge. And we go back all the way again to Deuteronomy 28, this curse, obedience and disobedience. They're cursed for their disobedience. They will be destroyed. They have no knowledge of God. And they may even know the laws, which they do. They know the Ten Commandments. But they've set them aside. And they've rejected that law. And they've rejected God's love. And they really don't believe God. They don't believe what God says. They don't believe what God says is good. Because if you did believe what God says is good, you would follow it. It's no different. Even in our minds, in today, in our world, when we're following Christ, down in the back of our heads, sometimes we think God has our best intention. We see that sin is better, and we see that almost like God's holding something back from us that's good. And we've somehow justified it, probably maybe even farther in the back of our head. We know that it's wrong. We know that it is better what God's telling us to do, but we don't always follow through in our sinful desires. Overcome, and we go down that road. But they rejected God's law, and he says, I reject you from being a priest to me. And so some would argue and say, no, so he's talking just about the priests again. But if you go back to Exodus 19, flip to Exodus 19, 6. Because we see this in, you know, 1 Peter 2, 9, in the new covenant, the New Testament. We're a royal priesthood, right? We're a people, we're a royal priesthood. But in Exodus 19, 6, this is at Mount Sinai where the law is given. He says, well, starting in 5, now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel. So it can be talking about the people in this verse where he's saying, I reject you from being a priest to me. Not just talking about the priesthood in the Old Testament, but talking about the people. Because in Exodus, he's referring to the people as priests. And since you have forgotten the law of God, of your God, I will also forget your children. So it seems to be that, you know, some commentators argue that it's talking about the mother, it's corporately as the nation, and then we see children as the individuals in within the nation. So he's saying, and since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. So corporately and individually, people are going to be, they're going to all go into exile ultimately. What are you thinking, John?
Another connection.
Oh, yeah.
So in the letter to Thyatira, Jesus talks about the Jezebel who's in the church in Thyatira, and he says that he will strike her children dead. Not her literal children, but
right.
for those who follow and believe what she is
right.
promoting.
Yeah.
Keep connecting.
Okay. So the more they increased, in verse 7, the more they increased, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. They feed on the sin of my people. They are greedy for their iniquity. And it shall be like people, like priests. I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. They shall eat, but not be satisfied. They shall play the whore, but not multiply, because they have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away the understanding. So the more they increase, so the more they have prosperity, so the more they have children, the more that they are, the more they sin against me. So what was happening, this prosperity was happening, fertility was happening, and how were they sinning? They were actually praising and worshiping Baal because of their fertility, because of their prosperity. So it's going to, the more they have children, the more they sin against me. And he says, I will change their glory into shame. So this nation, think about their glory, it's probably talking about the history of the nation of Israel and their wealth and who they are as a people, the people of God. And that's going to change from glory to shame. Because what's going to happen? The shame is the Assyrians are going to come in, take them into exile. And they aren't going to be looking back. All they're going to be is looking back to what they were and not what they are. Now they're a people in exile. He says, they feed on the sin of my people and they are greedy for their iniquity. Now this is a challenging verse. They feed on the sin of my people and they are greedy for their iniquity. So if you go back and you stick with me saying this isn't talking about priests, what's it talking about here? They feed on the sin of my people. So some that talk about saying it's talking about priests, they feed on the sin of my people, that the sin of the people, they bring in sacrifices, right? So they sin, they bring in sacrifices, and what do the people do? Or the priests do? They take a portion of that. They take a portion of that animal, and they get that for themselves. So they would argue that if it's talking about the priest, that that's what they're getting food, they're getting from that sacrifice. But it also can mean they feed on the sin of my people. They are greedy for their iniquity. So now parallelism. So these two lines should kind of agree in poetry. Okay? So if these two lines really agree, they feed on the sin of my people. They are greedy for their sin, for their iniquity. That's what they really want. They're greedy for their sin. So it's not talking about the priest and the offering. It's actually talking about they're greedy for their sin. This is what they desire. They don't desire for the knowledge of God and obeying his law. They desire to go down this road and are greedy for their sin. And he says, and it shall be like people, like priests. I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. This is the road the nation's going. They shall eat and not be satisfied. They shall play the whore, but not multiply. So they're going to go after their sin but not be satisfied. They're going to continue in whoredom, but they're not going to multiply. There isn't going to be this prosperity that they had before because they've thrown out all God's laws. So now this, they're going to play the whore but not multiply. And it says, because they have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away their understanding. So instead of following God's law, they'll forsake the Lord to cherish these things, whoredom, wine, and new wine. So sexual immorality, this is what they'll go after, and drunkenness, this is what they'll go after. This is what they're going to forsake God for. This is the road that it leads. And what is it going to do? It's going to take away their understanding. And this is what happens when you fall into sin, isn't it? You start to realize that you don't even know the difference between right and wrong. which gets scary because you go down these roads and you've justified things so long that you don't even know what's right and wrong anymore. And this sexual immorality and drunkenness has led them into this. They've gone down these roads of sin. They don't even understand what's right and wrong. It has dulled their understanding. They have no understanding anymore. And this shows the dullness in the next verse. My people inquire of a piece of wood, and their walking staff gives them oracles. For a spirit of whoredom has led them astray, and they have left their God to play the whore. So you got to think about this. Isaiah talks about the dullness and basically the stupidity of these people. They use a piece of wood to bake bread or do these other things as a walking stick. But this dullness of mind, then they turn around and they carve it and they bow down and worship it. Or they stick it in a field for their fertility god. I mean, it's really stupidity what they're doing. So he says, my people inquire of a piece of wood. This is who you look to instead of Yahweh? This is who you look to? He says, for a spirit of whoredom has led them astray. So it's not just because we are a people that sin. We're a people that sin. But do we have a spirit of sin? Do we have a spirit of whoredom? And a spirit of unfaithfulness. It's like 1 John that talks about you practice sin or you practice righteousness. It's like it doesn't mean that somebody in a worldly sense can't do something good that's practicing sin, a spirit of whoredom. That it doesn't mean that they can't do something in a sense good overall. In a sense, nothing is good before God without faith. But there is something good. There must be a connection there or something. That's right. But then you have somebody that practices righteousness. It doesn't mean that they won't sin, but they're living a life, a righteous life. This is their desire. This is what they desire to do, to obey God, and they fall into sin. But here, this is a life of whoredom. This is a life of unfaithfulness. This is these people. And this is where it's led them. It's led them astray. They have left their God to play the whore. So they've left Yahweh to worship the Baals. And that's how it is. They've left the one that's taken care of them, just like in the first three chapters when it talks about who gave them wine, bread, oil. They were praising Baal for it, but it was actually Yahweh. And they don't realize. They've justified their sin because this is where they want to go, so they've left their God to play the whore. Because if they stay with Yahweh, what does it mean they need to do? Be obedient. And that means they need to put these things aside, and they don't want to do that. It's like Romans 1. What do? You oppress the truth and unrighteousness. That's what you do. You hold it down because you want to live here. That's what you want to do. So they left their God. They sacrifice on the tops of mountains and burn offerings on the hills under oak, poplar, and terebinth because their shade is good. Therefore, your daughters play the whore and your brides commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they play the whore, nor your brides when they commit adultery. For the men themselves go aside with prostitutes and sacrifice with cult prostitutes, and a people without understanding shall come to ruin. So they will go onto the mountaintops. They will find places, high places to worship in shade where they have the ability to do this. And what is this going to do? Because of this, because you serve Baal, because you go worship, therefore your daughters will play the whore and your brides commit adultery. That's what's going to be produced out of this kind of worship. Because that's what's encouraged. That's what's going to happen. But it's interesting. In verse 14, he says, I will not punish your daughters when they play the whore, nor your brides when they commit adultery. Because ultimately, the men themselves are the ones that encourage this. They themselves go aside with prostitutes and sacrifice with cult prostitutes. And the people without understanding shall come to ruin. So the men are the one leading this out. The men are the one going into the temple that is supposed to be where they worship Yahweh. And they're sleeping with temple prostitutes. This is exactly what would happen. If this stuff's happening in your family, what's going to happen to your daughters and your wife and all these things are going to? Of course, they're going to commit adultery. Your children will live a life of whoredom. That's where they'll go. I mean, that's why it's so important in our lives, in our homes, that we're not hypocrites. That we live, we say one thing or we live a different way, is that we live our life according to God's word. Our children then see it, and then they live that out. And they see that, no, I do believe God's promises. I do have a knowledge of God. My parents, I've seen that in their life. Very important for your children. But what's going to happen then because of this? This is what your daughters will do. Your daughters are going to play the whore. Your brides are going to commit adultery. And at the end of the verse, and a people without understanding shall come to ruin. Because what's happened? They've lived this life of sexual immorality. They've lived this life of drunkenness, of new wine and wine. And what's going to happen? It's going to dull their understanding, and they shall come to ruin. And ultimately will destroy them. Ultimately will send them into exile because they've disobeyed Yahweh. And in 15, though you play the whore, O Israel, let not Judah become guilty. Enter not into Gilgal, nor go up to Beth-Aven, and swear not as the Lord lives. Like a stubborn heifer, Israel is born. Can the Lord now feed them like a lamb in a broad pasture? Ephraim is joined to idols. Leave him alone. When their drink is gone, they give themselves to whoring. Their rulers dearly love shame. A wind has wrapped them in its wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Though you play the whore, O Israel, let not Judah become guilty. So what is Israel doing? Israel, the northern 10 tribes, because we see references through these chapters. You're going to see him talk about Judah also, but still the focus still is on the 10 northern tribes. But here we see one of these first references referring to Judah. He says, though you play the whore, O Israel, let not Judah become guilty. So this is the woman to avoid, Judah, Israel, because she's whoring after other gods. You need to avoid her. Otherwise, you'll become guilty as well. It's just a matter of time. They're going down this road. Judah's doing the same thing. Ultimately, we know that because they go into exile from Babylon and a couple hundred years later, or less than that. So he says, enter not into Gilgal and nor go up to Beth-Aven and swear not as the Lord lives. So these were places of worship. We saw this in Amos talking about Gilgal and Bethel. This is probably this. Beth-Aven means house of evil. So he's probably talking about Bethel. It's kind of a play on words where he's saying here. So he's saying Gilgal and Bethel, don't go there because these are the places that they're worshiping. There is temple prostitution happening. Don't enter because they're going to lead you into guilt. Like a stubborn heifer, Israel is stubborn. Can the Lord now feed them like a lamb in a broad pasture? This is Israel. This is their desires. They go after other gods. You can't lead them. They have no desire to be led. It's like a stubborn heifer. What do? You try to prod it, you try to go, but it won't go where you want it to go. You want to take it to a broad pasture where there's abundance, of an abundant pasture, but they won't go. They don't realize that there's better to come. They don't want to go. And that's what's happened here. They've fallen into sin. The grass is greener on the other side. God's trying to take them there, but they don't want to go. And they're not seeing it. They're that stubborn heifer. And now, can the Lord now feed them like a lamb in a broad pasture? He can't. He can't lead them to this pasture because they won't go. Because Ephraim is joined to idols. Leave him alone. That's a scary thing. Because there's a point that God is done. We saw that in Amos, where God was not going to overlook. They were going into exile no matter what. They needed to repent, but they were going into exile. That's going to happen. And that's where this is. Because Ephraim has joined itself to Baal, leave him alone. So now God is removing himself from leading them, from being their shepherd. When their drink is gone, they give themselves to whoring. Their rulers dearly love shame. A wind has wrapped them in its wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. So they've abandoned Yahweh. They drink. And now we see this drunkenness, which leads to whoring, and their rulers dearly love shame. Or that could be translated, their shields dearly love shame, which is kind of a confusing verse. I'm not really totally sure what that fully means. Their rulers, whether it's talking about rulers, those over them, or their shields dearly love shame. I don't know how that honestly applies. Anybody think their shields?
It's shields are the rulers. Rulers are those who are supposed to shield, protect.
Protect. Yeah.
From whatever.
Right.
They are them.
And they're not. Because what do? They love shame. They love to go down these roads. And a wind has wrapped them in its wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifice. So this is probably referring to the people being caught up in these current things that they're doing. And there's just no control that's happening because they're going down this road. And someday they're going to look back and they're going to be ashamed because of their sacrifices. So they're going to look back at some point, probably at the time of exile, realizing why they were removed from the promised land. And they're going to look back to how they sacrificed in their temple. This syncretism that happened, this mixed up religion that they had by worshiping Baal and somewhat Yahweh. And they're going to look back and be ashamed because of their sacrifices. So in chapter 5, we see another oracle. And we see right away in verse 3 that it's talking about three different people. It says, "Hear this, O priests." So now it's actually dealing with the priests. "Pay attention, O house of Israel." This would be the people. "And give ear, O house of the king." So the reigning monarch, the king that's in place at this time. "For the judgment is for you." So it basically is encompassing everyone. "For you have been a snare at Mizpah and a net spread upon Tabor. So these were places, Mizpah and Tabor, were places of false worship. So what did a snare do and a net? It was to catch a bird, kill a bird, and eat a bird, right? That's what it was for, a snare, a net. And that's what these places are. He's saying, "For you have been a snare at Mizpah. You have been a net spread upon Tabor." That's what you've been. So it's been a place of false worship that's brought people in and captured them and is going to lead to death. And we see that in churches today. We see in our country, the churches across the country today, there are so many churches that aren't speaking truth, that aren't teaching truth, that could fall into this same, you could say this exact same thing about them. Churches that are just teaching the prosperity gospel or the health and wealth gospel. All these things, these are snares. These are nets that attract people. They bring them in, but there's no truth there. There's no real God. There's some truth, but there's no true gospel there. And it's brought them in, and it's going to lead to death. And that's what he's saying. That's what you've done here with these places of worship. "And the revolters have gone deep into slaughter, but I will discipline all of them." So this discipline is going to happen. And it's not just taking them into exile. There is actually instruction that from this word that's taking place. He is going to show them. But I think we see that just because there's a time where they're going to go, they're going to look back and go, "Oh, I was wrong." They're going to look back in shame on their sacrifices. And he says, "I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you have played the whore. Israel is defiled." So Ephraim was the largest tribe, the most prominent tribe in the 10 northern tribes, okay? Sometimes Ephraim is referring to, talking about the whole 10 tribes. And we see that in different places in Hosea. Ephraim is referred to as Israel. It's talking about the 10 northern tribes. But he's saying, "I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me." So God knows and sees everything that's happening. We have a sovereign God. He knows. He's in control. He sees everything. And they think, I think they, if they, they got their blinders on, or they think, well, Yahweh isn't truly seeing what's happening here. He's not really seeing how we're worshiping other gods. How temple prostitution's happening, how drunkenness is happening. But he says, "For now, O Ephraim, you have played the whore. God sees their unfaithfulness, and Israel's defiled because of it. Their deeds do not permit them to return to their God, for the spirit of whoredom is within them, and they know not the Lord. Their deeds do not permit them to return to their God. I don't know exactly what that means, but it could mean that you go down this road, your sin takes you down this far, that there's no turning back. Or God's taken them down this road and he's hardened their heart to the place where they're not turning back. Either way, they're not permitted to return to the Lord. And it's a dangerous road. When you fall into sin and you think you go down a road of adultery, or you go down a road of drunkenness, or you go down, pick your sin, whatever it is, and pretty soon you've justified it to a point and you've gone down that road, and there may not be a turning back. God may leave you down that road. It's danger to go there. That's why we need a body. That's why we need a body of believers to help people see when they're going down those roads and help point it out so that we don't keep going, because it's just like sitting in a pot of boiling water. Pretty soon you just keep going little by little by little, and all of a sudden it's too far. It's too late. And that was the nation of Israel. For the spirit of whoredom is within them, and they know not the Lord. Because they've gone to the place where they don't even know Yahweh anymore. They know Baal better than they know Yahweh. Because they say Baal. I remember what verse it was back. It says, Baal's my husband. Where he says, and instead of Yahweh being their husband. And that's where they are. So the pride of Israel testifies to his face. Israel and Ephraim shall stumble in his guilt. Judah also shall stumble with them. So this is probably talking about the pride of Israel. So it's talking about their history, who they are as a nation. They were, but that's testifying to their face, because that is not who they are anymore. They're stumbling. They're falling. You know, after Jeroboam II, which is in this time, they started in 850, Jeroboam II, he reigned for quite some time, 40 years. But then after that, the six kings, they didn't reign very long. Some would one month and was assassinated. One 6 months and was assassinated. One 2 years and was assassinated. So this was a time of just a nation that was in turmoil. Because before that, most kings was like 20, 30 years they reigned. But this is their nation now. And this is testifying to their face that this is what's happening. So Israel and Ephraim shall stumble in his guilt. Judah also shall stumble with them. So it's, like I said, only a matter of time. Yeah.
Where's Ahab in relation to this time?
Ahab is right before. Right before.
Interesting.
Not too long before that. Yes, because the Jehu dynasty, which is actually, where's that? Yeah, it was during the time of Jehu, because Jehu actually killed. So it was 30 years, somewhere in that time frame. So, okay, so the pride of Israel. Okay, so in verse 6, with their flocks and herds, they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn from them. So they aren't permitted. Now they go to seek the Lord, but they can't find him. He is withdrawn from them. That's another scary place when God, you go to seek, but God isn't there. Because they aren't truly, we'll see, they aren't truly coming in repentance. They aren't truly desiring God. So they felt they had dealt faithlessly with the Lord, for they have borne alien children. Now the new moon shall devour them with their fields. So they have dealt faithlessly with the Lord. So they're unfaithful to the Lord, to his covenant, for they have borne alien children. So just like if you go back to Gomer and Hosea probably had the one child together, which that one for sure was together, Jezreel. But then you had No Mercy and Not My People. Those two were probably children out of wedlock, where she went after other lovers, which is the same thing that's happening here. What did the nation of Israel do? They dealt faithlessly with the Lord, so they're unfaithful, for they have borne alien children. And that's what happened. That now you have a nation and you have an individuals who now are unfaithful. And they aren't a people of God. They're actually a people of Baal. Just like those weren't Hosea's children, now these aren't God's children. They're Baal's children, because that's who they're worshiping. That's who they're going after. He says, now the new moon shall devour them with their fields. So the new moon, that festival was a time where they praised God because of the abundance of the harvest. Okay, that's what they did at that festival. But now he's saying this, now the new moon shall devour with them with their fields. So there isn't going to be abundance. You've tainted this worship of this festival with Baal worship and all this. So now there will be no prosperity. And you will be devoured, the land and yourself. So he says, blow the horn in Gibeah, the trumpet in Ramah. Sound the alarms in Beth-Aven, so in Bethel probably. We follow you, O Benjamin. I have no idea what this verse means. I think there's different commentators saying different things, and I didn't have a ton of time to study on it, but it seems possibly. So obviously this is a warning. These cities are south of the border of the 10 northern tribes. Gibeah, Ramah, and Bethel are, well, not Bethel, but Bethel's right on the border. But the other two cities are south of the 10 northern tribes. So whether that sound a horn, there's armies coming from the south, but there's really no evidence that that took place. But either way, something's happening. Sounding a horn, sound a trumpet, alarm. And usually that was because of battle. Something was going to take place. Destruction was going to happen. So you needed to be ready. So he says in verse 9, Ephraim shall become a desolation in the day of punishment among the tribes of Israel. I make known what is sure. So Yahweh's saying this desolation's happening. This punishment's going to happen. And the princes of Judah have become like those who move the landmark. Upon them I will pour out my wrath like water. And I'm not going to go into that verse. We can talk about it if anybody wants to ask. You can ask after, but I want to finish this up. So Ephraim is oppressed, crushed in judgment, because he was determined to go after filth. So judgment's going to happen. He's going to be oppressed, crushed in judgment, because what? Because he went after filth, this nonsense, this meaningless idolatry. That's what he did. That's what he went after. And they will be crushed in judgment because of it. He says, but I am like a moth to Ephraim and like dry rot to the house of Judah. So what's interesting about this is who's the one doing the destruction, this decay and destruction that's happening? Yahweh's the one doing it. So he says, I am like a moth to Ephraim and like dry rot to the house of Judah. And when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to the great king. But he is not able to cure you or heal your wound. For I will be like a lion to Ephraim and like a young lion to the house of Judah. I will tear and go away. I will carry off and no one shall rescue. I will return again to my place until they acknowledge their guilt and seek my face, and in their distress earnestly seek me. So they start to see this decay and destruction that's happening in verse 12. They start to see what Yahweh's doing to them, okay? And what do? They go, Ephraim saw the sickness, and Judah saw his wound, what's happening, and Ephraim goes to Assyria and sent to the great king. So what do? Instead of going to Yahweh, they go to Assyria for help. There's probably talking in 2 Kings, it's talking about where, I think it's Menahem, that king actually goes to Assyria and pays tribute for help and for security. And he gets gold money from the people and he pays his tribute to Assyria. So what does he do? Instead of going to Yahweh, their king, they go to Assyria's king. But he is not able to cure you or heal your wound. For I will be like a lion to Ephraim and like a young lion to the house of Judah. So Assyria can't help them. Because who's doing the punishment? Yahweh. Does Assyria, the king of Assyria, have any power over Yahweh? No. And he says it's like taking a lion and a young lion that has prey in its mouth. Would anybody go up to a lion that has prey in its mouth and take it from the lion? I mean, that's a death wish, pretty much, right? I mean, you're not going to do that. That lion is going to take care of his prey. He's going to take his prey. He's not going to let someone take it from him. So this is like Yahweh. You think you're going to be able to rescue Israel? That's not going to happen. It can't happen. No one's going to tear and go away. I will carry off and no one shall rescue. That's how it is. Okay, six verses in six. Real quick. Come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn us, that he may heal us, that he has struck us down, and he will bind us up. After 2 days he will revive us, and on the third day he will raise us up, that we may live before him. Let us know. Let us press on to know the Lord. His going out is as sure as the dawn. He will come to us as the showers, as the spring rains that water the earth. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? What shall I do with you, O Judah? Your love is like a morning cloud, like the dew that goes early away. Therefore, I have hewn them by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth. And my judgment goes forth as the light. For I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. So this is a call to repentance. Hosea is saying, Israel, come, let us return to the Lord. I don't think this is so much the people are saying this as Hosea is saying, this is a call to repent. Come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn us. Look at us. Look what's happening, that he may heal us. He has struck us down and he will bind us up. After 2 days, he will revive us. So I think all this is saying in that in 2 days and in the third day rise us up is just talking a short period of time. Some try to apply it to Christ. I don't think it's there because it's not talking about death. It's Christ died and was raised up. This is talking about wounds and being ill. So it seems to be just referring to this short period of time. If you repent, God will do this. Doesn't mean he's not taking him in exile. But he will raise us up. He says, so let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. Press on to know the character of God again. Press on to know the nature of God again. Press on to know his laws. Press on to know his promises that you desire and you see. Then you love God and you're obedient. Press on to know God. His going out is as sure as the dawn. He will come to us as showers, as the spring rains that water the earth. So Hosea is being, you know what? You repent. I know God is faithful. He will turn. He will lead you again. He will shepherd his people. But he says, what shall I do with you, O Ephraim? Yahweh's saying, what shall I do with you, O Ephraim? What shall I do with you, O Judah? Your love is like a morning cloud, like the dew that goes away. So it fades fast, what they have. Their trust in Yahweh, their obedience to the covenant, it's like it just goes away quickly. It fades, just like these things. That's Israel. That's Judah. He's like, what should I do with you? In verse 5, it says, therefore, I have hewn them by the prophets. So he shaped them by cutting is what that word. It's like taking a piece of wood and shaping it by cutting with an axe or something like that. So he says, therefore, I hewn them by the prophets. So by the words they speak, I have slain them by the words of my mouth, and my judgment goes forth as light. So this judgment's coming. The prophets have told him this judgment's coming. And in verse 6, to end it, he says, for I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, and knowledge in the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. So I don't think this is like God saying, you know what, forget the sacrificial system. It's saying they have forgot Yahweh, and all they've done is use this as a ritual of worship. It's kind of like going to church and just singing the songs and getting knowledge in your head, but you aren't truly worshiping Yahweh for who he is. It's just, it's false worship because your heart attitude isn't right. The sacrificial system was a way to worship Yahweh. And there's no sense in even doing it if you don't have a right heart, because it means nothing. It's like coming to church. If you don't have a right heart, not that God can't work through church and work through the gospel being proclaimed to you, but ultimately, we're here to worship Yahweh. That's the point. If you don't have a right heart, in a sense, it's worthless. And so that's what it is here. They're sacrificing without a right heart. It is just a ritual. And then worse off, the 10 northern tribes compared to Judah, is they weren't even doing the rituals properly. They weren't even sacrificing properly. They were mixing Baal worship and Yahweh worship. So these three chapters, the focus is, I believe, on the knowledge of God, knowing God. But don't for a second walk away thinking that it's about just facts, because that's not the case. That proves it in the last verse that we just read. It's not just about the sacrifices, even though they didn't even have those right, but it's not just about doing those things. It's not just about knowing the facts. It's about knowing God. If you know God, which will turn to loving God, which then will turn to being obedient to God. And that should be our life. And that's what the gospel does. When God regenerates us, he changes us, he gives us a new mind, we have a desire for God's law, we have a desire to love people, to love God, and then what do? We go out and we love people and we love God. So I think that is the focus of these three chapters.